hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on a dark, dreary, spitting snow outside Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. Wasn't it like 70 degrees just about 2 weeks ago? Yeah, I think it was, because we were in the midst of our fall fun drive, and people were still complaining about it being warm outside, too warm for some of their cases. But here we are, very uncomfortable out there. But, so you drive carefully. You go here in the city, the roads are slightly treacherous. I saw some sliding going on. Try to avoid that. Don't go too fast. And keep your wits about you. More than anything else, you don't never know what someone's going to pop up trying to pull out when they shouldn't and all that. Keep that in mind. Stay tuned to us. We'll let you know if conditions change. The snow ought to be ceasing fairly soon, within the next few hours, and things should be a little bit better about that. It's going to get a little bit warmer, not too much. I guess the real warm air is coming in on Wednesday, maybe late Wednesday, early Thursday, so things should be a little better then for you. So just keep it under tow. Keep it easy, steady as she goes, so to speak, and we'll get you through the next few hours here on KKFI. Great show planned for you today. First, we're going to journey on over to the University of Missouri, Kansas City, to the Kansas City Repertory Theater, where they are presenting A Christmas Carol, opening in previews starting this weekend. That'll be the first half of the show. That's pre-recorded. Fortunately for the director, it's pre-recorded. So she's already done. And boy, I bet this morning she's glad that she's already done. And later on in the show, we're going to talk to our friends, actually Michael Grayman Parkers, the director, coming over from the Spinning Tree Theater. They're going to talk about their new presentation that's been running at the Just Off Broadway Theater. It's called The Nance. And we'll be talking about that with him when he arrives. But no need to hurry, Michael. We don't want anything to happen to you on the way over here. So let's journey on over to UMKC. It's the 38th annual retelling of the Christmas Carol. And they use several different kinds of adaptations to do the show. And she talks about that. Marissa Wolf, the director, talks about that during her interview. Let's go back and talk to Marissa right now. Right now on the Arts Magazine Show, we're going to talk to the director of the Kansas City Repertory Theater's 38th annual retelling of A Christmas Carol, a holiday tradition here in Kansas City. In the last 39 years, they've done this show 38 times. But a lot of the same actors, I don't think there's any actors who have done all of them. There may be. But a lot of the actors have done 20-plus years.
Absolutely.
I know that. With us to tell us all about it, the director of the show, Marissa Wolf. She is the director of A Christmas Carol. She is the former associate artistic director of the Rep and director of new works at the Rep as well. She's going to be moving on. Technically, I guess she's probably already moved the furniture to Portland, Oregon, a similar position up there. You're actually in charge of everything.
That's right. That's right. I'm the artistic director now at Portland Center Stage at the Armory, which is the sort of sister company in Portland, Oregon. It's a big flagship theater there. Very happy.
Is it similar to the Rep?
It is similar. It is. It's got two stages, just like the Rep, a 600 seat and a 200 seat, and a big, robust reach into the audience, and you know, doing new work, contemporary work, musicals, classics. So there's a similarity there, and I feel so grateful for my time here in Kansas City and at KC Rep to sort of cut my teeth at this level and have the opportunity to build out my career.
Sure. You directed several of the shows here over the last couple of years.
That's right.
Anyway, and you were always in charge of the new works for the last few years.
That's right.
So certainly well qualified and very successful out there in Portland. But we'd better get back and talk about the Christmas Carol, the 38th annual retelling. And when we talk about this, sometimes people don't understand, so I always try to go over it. The original work by Charles Dickens was a novella.
Right.
So various people have done adaptations of it, and I know over the years the Rep has done several different adaptations. This year is a little different.
Mm-hmm, that's right. So Dickens' novella is so beautiful, and it's actually quite a quick read, you know, very moving as we watch this miserly man, Ebenezer Scrooge, transformed and come to sort of see the people around him and value life and want to give and do good in the world. He's visited by three spirits who help him on his journey, go from being greedy and miserly and unkind to those around him to someone who actually can do good in the world. And the original adaptation that Casey Repp used has used for many years was by Barbara Fields. But you know, the interesting thing about that is that when you do something over so many decades, that adaptation is going to shift and morph and grow and change and sort of still honoring Barbara Fields' text, but with different directors coming in and putting all kinds of different different spins on the scenes. So what Casey Repp did last year was that Eric Rosen, our former artistic director, decided he was going to write a new adaptation. So he wrote a new adaptation. He also directed it, and it incorporated a lot more music and a lot more of Charles Dickens' actual text, which is very, very rich and beautiful. And so I was given the exciting opportunity this year to bring a new staging to Eric's adaptation. And actually, I've been working with Eric pretty closely as he's continued to make edits. So the script is still kind of considered a new play in that way. So we're making the scenes tighter and more impactful. And it's really fun to kind of reimagine some of the moments in ways that are new and fresh and open in terms of the connection the characters are making on stage.
A few years ago, they said, wow, we're going to make it darker.
That's true. You're right. There was a good run of years there where we were very interested in making it darker. And you know, and the text can take it because Dickens' novella is quite dark. I mean, it's really a kind of interior search of the soul. But we also added some really fun sort of spooky elements at that time. That was under the direction of Jerry Giannacchio. Lots of sort of video and sound effects. And I would say where it's landing right now is less spooky and more kind of going right to the guts and heart of the piece. And you know what's interesting? I'll give you an example of how it's a little different. So there's a section where there are these children called Ignorance and Want, who crawl out from Christmas Present, and we sort of watch them, and Christmas Present said to Scrooge, these are, you know, all of mankind's children, and they are in need, and you must take care of them. And, so, you know, sometimes that was played at varying levels of creepy, spooky horror-ness, you know, sort of very kind of almost like murder, you know, kind of action thriller, kind of creepy children. This year what we're doing, and I think the Dickens text really supports this, is that there's still going to be two children sort of crawling from, you know, the skirts of Christmas Present, except for what's really scary is just children who are hungry. Children who are abandoned, children who have no protection from adults or from the system in which we are living, I think that's way scarier than children who look like sort of zombie kids. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going for. You know what I mean? It's a brief moment in the play, but it's really just allowing the reality and the beauty and the devastation of who Ignorance and Want are to live.
Well, when you talk about scary, a lot of people always point towards the original meeting of, well, it wasn't the original meeting, but Marley's ghost and Scrooge. And
sure.
They talk about how frightening that aspect
sure.
is.
You know, we'll still have so many elements that people love. You know what I mean? We'll have Walter Coppedge, who plays that role beautifully. He'll come up from the floor in smoke, and he'll have chains and a crazy wig and ghostly makeup. So there's that. There's a sort of fun and theatricality of the scary factor there. But again, you know, Marley, he's there to, if he's frightening Scrooge, he's frightening Scrooge to try to save his life, to try to save him from himself and a life of sort of eternal, even in death, leaving a wake of destruction behind him and never resting even in the afterlife. That's Marley's goal. So really connecting with that Marley, he's not there to scare, he's there to warn and to get Scrooge to listen.
Well, on the lighter side, we should get lighter.
Sure.
It's the show is mostly light and fun to watch.
It is.
And there's a new emphasis on the music.
That's right. That's right. So it's a really buoyant, lively, very heartful, warm play. And it's got a lot of beautiful Christmas music woven throughout, and some older tunes that you might not know and some that you'll know and love. We've got an incredible quartet of four singers who traverse the stage and are woven into the action, as well as the full ensemble singing their hearts out. And we've got a lot of talented youth from first grade up through junior year, senior year of high school. 12 youth in each cast. We have two casts of youth from metro schools. And, that's something that I've been thrilled to be able to really weave through the story. You know, the kids in the play are in a lot of the scenes. You know, they're reading books with Dickens and they're supporting the kind of conjuring of the ghosts. So there's a way that I think this year I'm so excited to make it very family friendly. You know, kids can see themselves on stage.
We're speaking with Marissa Wolf. She's the director of the 38th retelling of the Kansas City Repertory's production of A Christmas Carol. And it will be open on November the 16th and have an extended run, actually. Usually things are wrapped up before Christmas Day, but I've noticed you've added performances after Christmas Day.
That's
all
right.
The way up to December 30th.
That's right. It's going to be that good. You have to come out even after Christmas.
Sure. The number to call for more information, 816-235-2700 or online at kcrep.org. You're speaking with Marissa. Of course, she's directing. Directors always like to put their own touch on things, mm-hmm. or their own mark, things mm-hmm. like that. I don't know. You've talked about your philosophy of the show. Mm-hmm. In what other ways do you like to put your mark on things?
You know what? It's interesting as I'm kind of treating directing this play the way I direct a lot of new plays, which is really trying to honor what's on the page and bring it to life in ways that feel like relevant and buoyant. And so I would say my own take is to make the music and the text feel really intertwined and lively, and that there's a lot of like momentum and movement, and that the kids are very prominent in the world, and that we're also, I'm so thrilled to be able to investigate a couple of new ways into the show. For example, our two ghosts in the beginning, the ghost of Christmas Past is now played by Bree Elrod, who you will have caught in many other shows at KC Rep, and who last year in Christmas Carol played Mrs. Cratchit. She's the ghost of Christmas Past, and she is playing it as a kind of, I might say, a Puck from A Midsummer Night's Dream, kind of a mischievous fairy creature, kind of hard-nosed and funny. So that's really fun. And we also have Shanna Jones playing Christmas Present. So that's a whole new costume, a whole new approach to the role. Rusty Steery did such a beautiful job with that role for many years, and right now Shanna's playing it. And so instead of being on stilts, she's not on stilts. She's got a whole new beautiful kind of layered costume that makes her look like a tree out of a forest, you know, just glowing with life, antlers, candles, the whole thing, and a staff that's sort of a beautiful woodland, like a branch that glitter will come out of, and she's playing it with a different kind of humor. Those kinds of additions and changes, while trying to really keep the body of the piece feeling tight and strong, are fun to play with.
Some of the Kansas City's finest actors have done this show over the years. Some for many years.
That's right.
Would you like to talk about some of the performers that
sure.
the public would remember and
yes.
see in these roles?
Well, you're going to see Gary Neal Johnson as Scrooge, and you've seen him as Scrooge for years. And before that, he played many other roles, actually. But he is just so beloved. And the thing about Gary is that every performance is fantastic. He is so present in that role. You think when you meet him, he is the cruelest, kind of miser you've ever met. And by the end, he's just so open and bubbly and skipping across the stage. And he does that transformation every show, 8-9 shows a week. It's incredible. You're going to see Mark Robbins play Dickens. Mark's also been in the show on and off for many years, and the way he handles a text, I've said to a friend, you know, I could listen to Mark Robbins read the phone book. It's just beautiful. You're going to see Walter Coppedge, who I mentioned as Scrooge, Peggy Freeson. She plays Mrs. Fezziwig and also plays the harp very beautifully throughout
the
show.
She actually has a harp CD when she's come over here to the show. I've had her harp CD.
I love that.
So, yeah.
She's so talented. She plays opposite John Rensenhouse, who you would have seen in Christmas Carol before, and I know has played Scrooge, actually, at the Rep at St. Louis. Wonderful presence. You're going to see a few returning faces who you might not have seen for a few years. Nicole Marie Green and Logan Black are playing the Cratchits. They are graduates of UMKC MFA program, and they just bring so much vitality and humor to the Cratchit family.
Sure, and it's important who plays Tiny Tim. People tend to gravitate towards Tiny Tim.
Absolutely. We have two wonderful young girls, actually. They're both in elementary school. They're both very short, which is important for Tiny Tim. And one is new and one is returning. And they both bring a beautiful honesty to that role. And, you know, they only have a few lines, but they're iconic lines.
A great cast, a lot of local people, faces you would remember. The first time, as I recall, seeing a change in Scrooge, he might disagree with me. Well, he didn't like anybody, really. But then, when the Ghost of the Past returned him to see old Fezziwig, he had a admiration for old Fezziwig, and I always think that that's kind of the turn, but maybe as a director you see it differently.
Oh, I think that's beautiful, yeah. I mean, it's all a journey, you know, and I think that right before he sees Fezziwig, he also sees himself as a boy, sort of lonely in the schoolyard, but then they go to Fezziwig, and that, you're right, I think it is a turning point, because he remembers how much joy he had once and how little it took to feel happy and cared for, that Fezziwig was not a rich business owner, but did put some money towards a little Christmas party each year, and that Christmas party meant everything to him. And remembering that mattered to him is a beautiful moment in the show. He also remembers his beloved Belle, and he remembers how he lost that chance with her because he basically chose money over her.
That's all part of the story. The Christmas Carol opens on November the 16th in previews. I guess the actual opening night is Saturday the 24th over at the Rep, and it will run then. I'm assuming no show on Christmas Day, but then performances then continue the 26th through December 30th, which is actually an extension from past years. They usually don't run that long at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. It's in the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC, where it has been for many years. And, of course, it was redone a few years ago. So if you haven't seen a show since then, that might be something you might consider going on. From, of course, the novella by Charles Dickens, done through various adaptations over the year. This year, an Eric Rosen adaptation with staging by Marissa Wolfe, who is here today. Do you enjoy the staging or directing the people? Which is your favorite part of being a director?
Oh, you know, I love it. It's so fun being in the room. It's truly such a gift and a joy to direct. And a lot of it is getting to create a space that feels rich and ripe for imaginative risk-taking, you know? So I've got a room of very talented actors. Cheryl Weaver, I wanted to give a shout-out to as well. She's just incredible and has been in the show for many years. You know, you get to sort of work with this team, some of whom are new, some of whom have been doing it, and kind of really go back to the text and say, what does this mean to us now? Why is this character saying this? Oh, what if we did it this way? What if we did it that way? And people are really game, you know? So it feels like a privilege to get to this year don the hat of director for this iconic show.
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about the people behind the scenes who are just as important in some instances more so. You have your tech crew. You have especially your costuming department.
Yes.
What all goes into costuming these people for the era that the show takes place?
Yes. You know, it's amazing because this is one of the shows that we keep at KC Rep, meaning a lot of other shows, you know, once we're done, you know, we might save some pieces from it or we'll save some costumes from it, but not all of it sort of makes it into our storage. This is a show that makes it into our storage every year, obviously. And actually just the set just waits on a gigantic storage, like flatbed truck outside of the rep. If you notice, put a little eye to it when you're in the parking lot next time. That's where it lives all year until it has its day in the sun during November and December. So it's a beloved set that you will have seen many times, the gorgeous turntable and layers of a cityscape. The costumes also have been amassed over many, many years. So sometimes, you know, you're going to see someone in our show wearing a vest or wearing a piece of a costume that someone else might have worn 15 years ago in a very different kind of look.
Sure.
But it's all within the same, the costume world has remained within the same general beautiful period, kind of layers and texture, that kind of world, Dickensian England. But the really cool thing about how we work with costumes is that it's an opportunity for an MFA costume design student from UMKC every year. This year we're working with Stella Tagg. She also did it last year. And so if there is a need for any new costume to be designed, it falls to the MFA student. And so Stella's designed a few new costumes this year, including for Christmas past and Christmas present. She's done an excellent job. And we have a phenomenal costume shop at KC Rep. So the artisans and managers of that shop have their hands full because they've got to then fit costumes to, you know, 20 adult actors and 25 youth. And, you know, sometimes the size of the actor playing Bob Cratchit, for example, changes year to year because it's a different actor. And so that's up to the costume shop then to kind of fill in the pieces of how can we get the same look but with different pants.
Well, sure. Different actors would play it slightly different. They're still
right.
Playing the same character.
Totally.
But still, like I said earlier, Marissa likes to put her own mark on things. So do some of the actors.
Absolutely.
Do you encourage that? But
yes.
Not too much, but probably some.
Well, you know what's so interesting is I do encourage it because I think the only way you can have a really, really fantastic production is if all of the actors are bringing their best, most honest work. And they can only bring their most honest work if I've hired them to do their job of really interrogating the text and building something real to them. If they're only hired to fill a track that was built years ago, the work's going to feel less authentic. It's going to feel more kind of phoned in. And given that, you know, when you're hiring a body of actors, you're thinking about, okay, you know, who's going to carry the torch for this role in a way that feels right. And then, of course, you've got your returning role. So, you know, with Gary Neal Johnson at the center as Scrooge, he really keeps that kind of, he keeps it fresh and he keeps the structure in place in a way because he has this sort of amazing journey that he goes on. And every year there's a consistency to that, but there's also a discovery process every year for him.
Yeah, well, so you need to pay close attention because sometimes little things, especially at the beginning, little things turn out to be something significant later on, and you have
right.
to be prepared for that.
That's
of course,
right.
the actors know all of this.
Right, right.
The audience has to be clued in on this. They're so used to seeing different versions of it on television and in films especially. There's a George C. Scott version. There's an Alistair, what is the man's name? The really old black and white version, which is still one of the best, actually.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Yeah, so iconic.
Oh, sure. And I have to admit, the first time I ever saw a movie of it, it was the Mr. Magoo version.
Amazing. Where
the miserly Mr. Magoo played Scrooge. And you laugh to yourself, I know, but you know, it worked.
I love it. I can totally see that.
Yeah, Jim Backus did a wonderful job on that voice. He was the voice of Mr. Magoo. He did a wonderful job doing the Scrooge version.
That's great.
And it made me want to see the other versions.
That's great.
After that, yeah. The show runs, of course, opening on November 16th in previews. And I assume people are welcome to go see the previews.
Yeah, previews are fun.
Yeah. Oh, opening night is actually November 24th. It'll run through, I guess, the 24th. They'll have that off. Well, they'll have Mondays off, usually. And it's a demanding schedule. That's why I'm going through all this. And performances then continue through December 30th at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC. It is a demanding schedule. Not only do they have Tuesday through Sunday shows, they often will have matinees for schools during the week.
You're absolutely right. I mean, these actors are sometimes hitting 10 show weeks. So, you know, it's Tuesday through Sunday, and you're right, we've often got student matinees on Tuesday, Thursdays, so those are two show days for the actors, and then you've got, you know, Saturday, Sunday, two show days, so it's very intense, and the actors have to keep themselves healthy.
Oh, sure.
And keep the work fresh and alive.
Oh, yeah, I've heard the actors talking about the cold medicines that
they take,
for instance. They know all the names and all of that to keep going through all of that. But what's it like for them to play for a group of grade school kids? And I think I saw it years ago.
Oh, beautiful.
A group of grade school kids, an audience full of them. And some of them probably have not seen it before.
That's right. That's right. You know, the student matinees for all the shows at KC Rep, and particularly Christmas Carol, are so wonderful because kids are a very honest audience. You know, so they're with you. If you hook them in, they are with you. And if it's a little slow, they'll tell you because they won't be paying attention. but the fun thing about Christmas Carol is I think that there's pleasure in the both in the singing and all of the moments of kids on stage, and also in the creepier moments. I think they kind of laugh or enjoy, not laugh, but they sort of titter, and enjoy the kind of being surprised.
So, well, the show, of course, opens up in previews on November 16th, runs through December the 30th. It's a nice long run, a good payday, frankly, for some of the actors.
Sure.
That'll be happening at the Rep. It was originally a novella by Charles Dickens using various adaptations. Could he even imagine some of the productions that have been done from that short novella?
You know, that's so interesting because do you want to know something wild, which is actually in the prologue of this play, is that Charles Dickens himself did read his own novella out loud to audiences. He made a lot of money doing that. And so I think that there's something inherently theatrical about the novella anyway that Dickens knew he had on his hands, that he loved to give voice to all those characters by himself. He was like a one-man show. So I'd like to think that he would be very, very pleased with all of the different renditions around the country.
There's actually a descendant of his.
Is that right?
Who does that at libraries around town. If you're interested, check with, and I think it's the Mid-Continent Library
Beautiful.
System.
Beautiful.
Check with them
fun.
To see if he's going to be doing it at a library near you. Mm. Of course, he can only do it a limited number of times. Mm-hmm. He can't be everywhere. But this is much in the way that you would have seen Dickens do it many years ago. I want to thank my guest, Marissa Wolf, for being with us. She is directing the 38th annual retelling of A Christmas Carol at the Spencer Theater on the campus of UMKC, 4949 Cherry. If you need to find it on MapQuest, you need the zip code 64110. You can go online at kcrep.org, or you can dial 816-235-2700. Lots of performances. Find the one that works best for you. That would be my suggestion. Probably going online would be the best way to do this. You're going to be back also directing in the spring.
That's right.
Before you go to a full-time work in Portland.
That's right. Well, you know, amazingly, I've already moved to Portland, but I'm coming back for this show, and I'm coming back to direct Pride and Prejudice, a new adaptation of the Jane Austen novel by Kate Hamill. So that'll be a fun one. Don't miss that.
We'll talk about that come spring. Thanks so much for being
here. Thank you very much.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. Yes, it's nasty out there. Be careful wherever you drive. I saw two close calls on my drive over here. Of course, I don't drive that fast. When you get to be a little older, the thrill of that kind of leaves. But I saw two close calls. So wherever you are, be very, very careful out there. Welcome back to the program. Nice hearing about the annual event over at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. And now we're going to move over to the Just Off Broadway Theater that's down in Pin Valley Park, where a nice run of The Nance has been going on. With us to talk about it, Andrew Grayman Parkhurst. He is the director of the show, well, co-director of the show, and he's also the artistic director down at Spinning Tree Theater. Welcome back.
Thanks, Michael.
To the show once again, and he brought along with him Hollis Wilhoit, who plays the role of Ephraim in the show, mm-hmm. kind of the MC of the show. Course, yeah. It's about burlesque.
It is.
And we're going to get into that in a minute, but you have a special event going on at the JOB tonight. You're having Angela Hagenbach sing
for you. We are. It's the first of our cabaret series for our 2018-19 season, and we're starting with Angela Hagenbach. She's bringing around her trio of musicians, Michael Warren, Tyrone Clark, Roger Wilder. It's going to be a nice night, and it's going to be hot in there. So if you can brave the cold, come on down. It's going to be a great night of music. Yeah, it's just Warnell and Maine are doing well. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And of course, Roger Wilder, of course, has a program on this radio station.
That's right,
if you've never seen what Wild Man Wilder looks like in person.
They're fantastic.
You can see him at the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a good night. And then our guild also sponsors it, so there's always a reception following. And it's just going to be a great night of music.
Yeah,
definitely.
How often do you do this?
We do it three times a year. So this is our first one. So we'll do it again in January, February, and then for our final show of the season, we'll do another one. So it's another way to come out and support Spinning Tree Theater. And
so it's tonight at the Just Off Broadway Theater, a benefit for Spinning Tree Theater.
7:30 p.m.
I was going to ask, we can't give prices, but where can they find out? On your website?
Our website, and go to Central Ticket Office.
So the same as the information I have for the show, SpinningTreeTheater.com and 816-235-6222.
That's it.
That's for the show that we're going to talk about and for the performance by Angela Hagenbach going on tonight. You probably don't see her very often on a Monday.
No, that's true. That's true. She's fantastic. We've actually had her in a couple of Spinning Tree shows. She was in Once on This Island last year, and she did our production of Nine the year before. So she's even moving into theater a little bit, and she's loving it. She's great.
Well, your run of The Nance continues at the Just Off Broadway Theater. You have another weekend of performances going on. It'll reopen again on Wednesday the 14th. Performance on the Thursday the 15th, Friday the 16th, Saturday the 17th. All of those are at 7:30 p.m. And a matinee on Sunday the 18th at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Central. It's the very south end of Pin Valley Park, right near 31st Street.
It's that great building that used to be police stables back in the day. It's a really cool space. You know, I grew up in Cincinnati, and there's the Cincinnati Playhouse in the park. And I always loved the idea of theater. I mean, theater in the park. I mean, if you think about it, just like Heart of America Shakespeare Festival, and it's a neat place. It's a neat place to come to the theater.
Yeah. Well, Hollis Wilhoit is here also. Mm-hmm. He was in Measure for Measure at the Confluence Theater. That's new.
Yes, it is a new theater company started by Logan Black. We performed Measure for Measure at the Squeezebox Theater, owned by Carla Deal and Sterling Witt.
Yeah. Well, we'll have them send me something.
I will.
Because I have very little other than mouth-to-mouth information about them. So they need to get to be part of this long, round robin of things that goes on.
Absolutely. They'd be happy to be here.
And you've also appeared at the Heart America Shakespeare Festival. What have you done there?
I actually started my Kansas City career at the Heart of America Shakespeare Festival 3 years ago in their production of King Lear. That was an amazing, very hot, very wonderful experience. I also was featured in Hamlet and last year's production of Much Ado About Nothing.
Yeah,
well, we're so excited to have Hollis. We've wanted to work with him for a while, and he's incredible. He's got it all.
It's nice of you to say.
Has a nice, modest look on his face. Yeah. Well, you play the Nance.
No, I actually play Ephraim, who is the MC of this show within the show in the Nance. I do work with the Nance in several sketches. The Nance is played by Andy Perkins, just a wonderful person and a lovely stage partner.
Okay,
it's a great group. Yeah, it's a great group.
For people not familiar with burlesque, let's talk a little bit about it. Usually, we only talk about burlesque when one of the dance groups comes on the show. But this is part of your show.
Absolutely.
Well.
Yeah, it's 1937, New York City. Mayor LaGuardia is trying to clean up the city in anticipation of the World's Fair in 1939. Yeah. And so he was basically attacking burlesque, vaudeville, all of the degenerative behavior. Everything was being sort of attacked around that time. And so he was going after this. And the Nance, again, you know, Douglas Carter Bean, who wrote this play, he didn't know anything about the Nance. He didn't know much about the character. He read it in a book, which he found so interesting, which was Gay New York by George Chauncey. And so he read about this character, and it was usually played by a straight man. Douglas Carter Bean wrote this about a gay man. A gay man who is starting in a relationship. So there's a little bit of this idea of, you know, again, 1937, who's able to be out of the closet in 1937. Yeah. And so there's this guy who is basically fighting with the idea of letting himself be in love, but his day job is making fun of him, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. kind of stereotyping him. And so kind of there's a little bit of the political in there, but it's the psychology of how you deal with that and letting yourself fall in love. It's a love story at the start. And then, with all of that, it's also burlesque. So you've got all of the famous scenes, Niagara Falls, the quiet peace and quiet rest home. And then you've got the little song and dance numbers in there. So we kind of had to approach this piece like a musical in so many fashion.
Oh, sure. I mean, there was usually a doctor sketch.
Of course. And I have the privilege of playing the mad scientist in one of the show within the show sketches. And what makes those scenes so interesting is that tensions are high. The commissioner of licensing, Paul Moss, mm-hmm. might be in the audience watching for any degenerate behavior. So as we're kind of censoring ourselves in the moment in these sketches, yeah, it raises the stakes in a magnificent way.
Sure. It was so popular, though. Yeah. I mean, when you the old-timers... can't include myself, but they talk about how if you've ever seen the Sunshine Boys, either the movie or one of the stage mm-hmm. version,
right.
they give you a little bit of flavor of what burlesque was like,
yep,
and the different
of course.
Kinds of skits that they did, and I guess the character you play mm-hmm. that was involved in several of those sketches.
Of
I mean,
course.
I guess they kind of separated the dance numbers
in some ways. In this show, I do a little bit of dancing, but
uh-huh.
most of the dancing is performed by the ladies in the show. We've got Sarah Montoya, Katie Gilchrist, and Ashley Personet, all wonderful dancers, and they take on that load.
Well, you got some fine dancers in the show.
It's great. Yes. Yeah, and they're all used to performing in this sort of fashion. I mean, Katie's done quite a bit of burlesque, and so has mm-hmm. Ashley. So it's kind of fun to bring them into it to sort of see how they're playing with it and all that.
Sure.
And then the cast is round out with Timothy Michael Houston, who mm-hmm. plays the love interest to Chauncey.
Yeah.
The possibility of love.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting the way that's woven into kind of a different type scenario. The audience is probably basically unaware, probably, of what they're seeing.
Because, I mean, you know, so of course we start, you know, roughly a year ago, where we start talking about what our shows are. And so we've started introducing it to it. But I love that, you know, our audience members are coming out of the theater saying, I had no idea. We love that you guys are introducing us to new characters and new people in history that just we didn't know their story at all. We started last year because we did Casa Valentina, which was Harvey Fierstein's piece about men, again, sort of straight men that come up from the city on the weekends to dress as women and kind of live as women, kind of their true selves in many fashion. And again, so after we did that, we were like, we want to tell another story because people were really engaged and loved the idea of like, I had no idea. So you're entertained and you're completely educated in one fashion too, but you're taken on a journey. And so the Nance came into our laps and we just started reading about it. And
I suppose it was one of those kind of situations where the upper crust and the intellectuals went for like the opera,
yeah.
the ballet, and things like that, and shows on Broadway, of course, although The Follies on Broadway was very close to Burlesque.
Absolutely. So for our first preview, mm-hmm. Opal, who is a local, she used to be a burlesque performer. She lives here in Kansas City, and she was doing burlesque even in the 60s and 70s and touring around the country. And she brought her son, who also grew up on the road with her. And so I think even in the 60s and 70s, there were still facets of burlesque, mm-hmm. but I think it was usually combined with the adult, you know, porn industry. I think there was, so it sort of became a little something different in the 40s, but it's, she loved it. She remembered her days too, and there's actually a documentary coming out on her.
Kansas City was a usual stop, from what I've told, for burlesque and vaudeville and shows like that. Tempest Storm, I did a phone interview with Tempest Storm a few years ago, and she talked about that. She says it was, but she said it's different than what people think. She says they think of it more as a quote-unquote strip show, and while elements of that are involved, it was really a whole show.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Yeah. And The Folly was such a house, too, because isn't there always the argument that Gypsy Rose Lee did one of her first strips behind behind the curtain strip was either here or was it St. Louis? There's sort of a little battle, I think.
The story I was told, not by Tempest, but by others, was that Gypsy would do her act, but at the same time, you got her opinions on political commentary while it was happening. Mm-hmm. So if you can imagine this, the mostly male audience for her was watching her, and here she was giving them a rundown on her opinions of issues of the day at the same time.
Brilliant.
If you can imagine
yes.
That's how she did it.
That's how she did it, yeah.
When she had their attention.
Yeah, for sure. Okay.
That's the key, I suppose, trying to get their attention and all that. So it served a purpose, but it was very popular from what I've read, despite the fact that others frowned upon it and all of that. It was very popular with the public at large, as a lot of things are.
Yeah. And again, this play is just so multifaceted, too, because, you know, Katie Kilchrist plays Sylvie Sylvain, which is actually named after a real stripper, and she plays that. But she's sort of our communist in our group that is like, you know, so the political kind of matches, because you've got Chauncey, who is not only a gay man, but he is a conservative Republican gay man who can't stand Roosevelt. And so tied in with this piece, you've got Sylvie and Chauncey that are constantly going head-to-head over this, and it's really interesting to have those discussions when really back then you could probably have more of those discussions, and that's a whole other topic. But I think Republicans and Democrats were a little bit kind of closer, and there's you've got a little bit of that conversation kind of going on with this piece too.
Yeah. What has the audience reaction been in the first couple of weekends? Have they been surprised?
They've been surprised. What I think we also like about this piece is that they come out very moved by the piece, but there is so much laughter because, again, you've got all of the sketches in there. So you are, the poignancy is there. The laughter is there. I think you get it all with this play.
There's a lot of catharsis needed in this show. The first scene, I wouldn't call it heavy, but it's definitely soft-spoken and very character-driven. And so for audiences to jump into these very deep character-based scenes and then to be yanked out and placed into some wild vaudevillian sketch is really cool and masterful. Douglas Carter Bean is just he's my favorite playwright.
It gives the audience an indication, and I've said this before, but of what burlesque was actually like. Yeah. More than just, people think it was just dancing. It was much more than that, of course. The dancing was a part of it, sure, but it was the whole package. There was singing, there was sketches, there was comedy. Uh-huh.
It's like a classic, because some of the people still know these sketches, so that's why I think a classic is a classic. But audience members are staying, which is really nice. They're coming out, and they're just hanging in the lobby, waiting to meet actors in the lobby because they just want to talk about it. And I always think that's the best. That's the sign of something that we're proud of, because people just have those conversations or those drive-home conversations.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And it probably is different from what they expected. Performances continue then on Wednesday the 14th, mm-hmm. Thursday the 15th, Friday the 16th, Saturday the 17th, all 7:30 p.m. performances. And then a matinee, and that probably never happened in burlesque. They have an afternoon.
Maybe
it did. Yeah. On Sunday the 18th at 2 o'clock p.m., at the Just Off Broadway Theater, 3051 Central, the number to call for more information, 816 435-6222 or online. And you can click through and get it online as well, SpinningTreeTheater.com. We're speaking with the director, Andrew Grayman Parkhurst, and Hollis Wilhoit, who plays the role of Ephraim in the show. You have a lot going on there at Spinning Tree. How many, and all the shows are now at the JOB?
It's actually been great. We're able to call it home right now. We did all of our shows there last year, this year, and actually it looks like next year we'll be there again too. So we're finding a place there. And they're actually even improving the space because there will be, there's new chairs coming in and new risers. So it's even, the black box space is even going to be better. So yeah. It's been really great for us. We love the intimacy of the piece.
If I hear any criticisms about the JOB, it's that it's hard to get in there.
And we've taught everybody. Yes. Well, we always say take Main to Wyandotte, either Main or Broadway to Wyandotte, and it's right there. It's you just do not take 31st. Yeah, we tell people all the time, and you know, now that we've gotten everybody down there, it's not as much of an issue. So, but Central Ticket Office, they're going to tell you how to get there, and just follow directions. Don't GPS it.
Oh, GPS would be totally confused.
Yeah.
What do you have coming up for the rest of the year?
Well, we've got our next show is Eve Ensler's Emotional Creature, and she, of course, is the playwright of the Vagina Monologues, and this is a gorgeous piece, stars six young women, and it's a celebration of women from around the world. What kind of, you know, issues they're dealing with, what brings them joy, what brings them pain and sorrow, and it is a really, really cool piece. That also has music and dance kind of mixed in with it, too. It's a really cool piece. It's played all over the country, and this is going to be a KC premiere, Emotional Creature.
Right.
And then we close our season with Billy Elliot. We're bringing the musical Billy Elliot over here, which also means a lot to us.
You like doing musicals or shows that have music in them, at least.
Absolutely, yeah. We tend to do, you know, two plays and two musicals a year. We love both equally and have, you know, as much experience in that. But there are definitely those musicals and pieces out there that we love to tackle.
You worked on that big piece that they did out at, it used to be called Sandstone. What is
yes.
it called now? You were the directing there?
Yeah, Andrew and I directed The Wizard of Oz for Theater League and Mark Edelman this past summer. It was big. It's a big thing.
Are they going to do more of those? Are they going to turn it into a Starlight West?
I think he's going to hold off for a little bit to sort of see what it is. I think that the venue might be something that the people haven't quite gotten used to being out there again. So I think he's going to hold off for right now with that. But it would be kind of nice. Loved the show.
Oh, it was a well-known venue. I remember seeing the Grateful Dead out there years ago. They were all alive then.
Yeah.
And it was quite a show. The only thing I thought was unusual is they didn't do the little banter that sometimes the artists do with the audience. Didn't say a word. They were introduced. They played. It was intermission. Still not a word, except for the public address and answer. And then they started the second act with more numbers and played all the way through to the end. Not a word from any of them. I assume they could all speak.
Yeah. But who knows? They didn't.
But who knows? And Jerry Garcia was 15 feet from me. He looked fine then.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about his artist. I have some of his ties. But that's another story.
You do? Yeah. Yes.
but that was quite a feather in your cap to do
that
a show.
That was great. We had a great time with that. It was the first time they used a huge LED screen as a backdrop. With permission from Warner Brothers to do things, moments from the film as backdrop. So it was a great experience.
Oh,
lots
sure.
of fun.
Any thoughts to doing something like that in your own shows?
The LED screen?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Definitely not very Spinning Tree Theater, but yeah, I think we keep it a little bit smaller, modest. Yeah.
Okay, Hollis, do you have anything coming up you'd like to talk about?
I do. I'm actually starting rehearsals today for Milking Christmas, going down at the Living Room Theater this December through, I believe, January 6th, I think is the closing performance. And I'm going to be performing as the Little Prince in The Little Prince at Messner Puppet Studio.
Ah, is it fun working with the puppets?
You know what? This will be my first time.
Ah.
So we'll find out. I know that I'm going to be co-directed by a very good friend of mine, Erica Baker. And she and I work very well together. We've devised some theater together in the past. So she's a lovely teacher. I'm sure I'll learn as fast as I can.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
And that'll be at the Planetarium at Union Station. So that'll be really, really cool. The projections will just make that piece pop.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm glad they moved the planetarium over there. It was at the museum of Northeast Kansas City for a long time. And then it kind of disappeared. People thought, where did it go? And that's where it ended up.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, what does Spinning Tree have as plans for the future? I mean, you're great at doing musicals, but you do regular plays as well.
We do. We do. Actually, you know, tonight also at our at Angela Hagenbach's show, we're going to announce the first two shows of our next season. We've got actually have our whole season planned out. I'm not going to talk about it yet. We're going to wait. You got to come to the show tonight if you want to hear about the shows. But it's we're excited to keep on spinning into our ninth season next year.
So is Ms. Hagenbach going to have a holiday themed concert or?
You mean tonight?
Tonight?
No, I think she's doing. We're kind of doing story songs. Huh? She's taking us on journeys, which I love. Which she's going to do beautifully.
Well, she's especially good at the ballads.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah. People love her. She's got quite a reputation. She's worked all over the world, and so we're just happy to have her as a Kansas City native.
Would you like to see yourself getting bigger, or do you think it's about the right size now? When you and your partner Andrew dream,
and we do every day. No, we always sort of say we never want to kind of settle where we are. We always are kind of trying to, you know, engage the community, reach out, grow. We want to grow our education department. So everything is, again, we have goals to just keep growing and keep moving. I mean, we want to keep existing, you know, into our ninth season. But at the same time, we don't want to settle. We're going to keep moving, moving and grooving.
What about Ephraim?
What about Ephraim? Well, I'm sticking around Kansas City, absolutely. I moved here about three and a half years ago and had no idea that a sustainable acting career was possible here. I was happily surprised. So I'm not going anywhere quite yet, but I'm keeping my options open.
Okay. Now, people are surprised when they come here. People, in fact, I know an actor, this was years ago, he moved from Kansas City to New York for more opportunities. He said the word was going around the village. He lived in Greenwich Village. Word was going around the village about this company that was auditioning people for shows they were doing in the Midwest. That should have clued him right there.
Right?
And yes, he was auditioning for the Kansas City Repertory Theater.
Yeah.
And he moved all the way to New York to do that. Didn't really need to.
Yeah. It's a common story.
It is a common story. Yeah. It's true. It's great that this city has become quite the theater town. We already knew it was an arts town, but I mean, even since we've been here for 8 years, the theater has just grown.
Getting better and better. And new young companies are just blossoming up everywhere, putting on great work, Confluence being one of them.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like what you talked about earlier.
And it helps us keep people here, too. You know, it's like, maybe go away, come back.
Sure.
We have a lot of people also that move here after they've had their careers on Broadway and Hollywood. They sort of come back and they're here. So it's nice to have that. We can do a lot of things.
We can see them on the stage here. So two big things coming up this week. Well, more than two. But Angela Hagenbach tonight at the Just Off Broadway Theater. And later on, starting on Wednesday, running through Sunday, you're continuing your run of the Nance. The number to call for more information for both of those, 816-235-6222, or online at spinningtreetheater.com. The Just Off Broadway Theater is located at 3051 Central at the very south end of Pin Valley Park. Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. Michael Grayman Parkhurst, the director, the co-director of the show, and the managing director of Spinning Tree Theater, and Hollis Wilhite, who plays the role of Wilhold. Plays the role of Ephraim in the show. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Michael.
As well, the Jazz Insider, Sam, is with us today. He'll be playing some great jazz for you. We're going to have jazz from 1 to 3. Then we're going to have the blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.